I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation, and today's show, Alive at Oakland Cemetery.
Oakland is a repository of the families of Atlanta from an extremely important time, as well as a place that exhibits the customs of a particular era that was very important in the whole idea of life and death.
Everybody's buried there.
I like to say it this way.
It was the city cemetery, so you have...
If you were the banker to the railroad, you're buried there. If you owned the railroad, you're there. If you drove the train and were an engineer, you were there. If you worked anywhere on the railroad driving spikes or anything like that, you're going to be there. If you slept under the railroad car because you were a vagrant, you're going to be there. It was a totally egalitarian environment.
Christian and Jew, you even have Eastern European and Western European Jews buried in very different ways. You have the paupers who are buried in unmarked graves, which can only be memorialized by a collective plaque. You have an African-American section.
This is actually the closest some of us will ever get to our ancestors. This is the place where we know that they're buried, whether we know the exact plot to stand upon or not, in this cemetery, in this place, which is only 48 acres. That's pretty close to getting to the previous generations, and people still come to celebrate. They take pictures of the gate, the grounds in general, the African-American burial ground specifically, to show this is part of my history, part of my ancestry.
It maps into the ground the actual structure of this period in Atlanta's history, and therefore is extremely important for the city and for future generations to remember that the world was not always the way it is now, and that our people who came before us intervened in this. They did some things right. They did some things wrong. We inherit whatever it is they left us. We are doing the same thing, and future generations will inherit what we leave them.
Oakland was in terrible disrepair in the 50s and 60s. It suffered its greatest insult in the mid-70s when some vandals came in and decided to start pushing over monuments and tombstones. They did particular damage within the Jewish section of the cemetery because that is an area where the tablet is still the primary marker, and they are very close. And so you can almost play dominoes with those tablets, and they literally did. And that's when the Historic Oakland Foundation came along. The Historic Oakland Foundation saw that we were losing what was a true treasure as it related to the real history of Atlanta. That spot is the oldest landmark in continuous use that we have in the city of Atlanta. So it is a very, very important site.
Well, there's one kind favor I'll ask of you. One kind favor I'll ask of you. Oh, there's one kind favor I'll ask of you. See that my grave is kept clean.
My guests today are George Hart, the former board chair for Historic Oakland Foundation.
And I love his tombstone and his epitaph, which I may steal, but I don't think I qualify. And that is, it's very simple. It says, generous and sympathetic, loyal and courageous. His admirers were legion.
Douglas C. Allen, the Senior Associate Dean of Architecture at Georgia Tech and a Master Landscape Architect.
Like most people, before I knew what landscape architecture was, I thought it was just sort of putting shrubs out here around this building. It never dawned on me that people actually, all the stuff you see out the window in terms of subdivisions of land, parcels, streets, infrastructure, parks, public spaces, everything that's not under a roof is designed by somebody.
D.L. Henderson, a Doctor of Humanities and researcher of Atlanta's African-American history.
While cemeteries are cultural repositories of local history and the values and beliefs of the people who use them, they're also microcosms of society. And you can look at the time period in which they developed and see the values and beliefs of the people. And part of those values and beliefs were that a segregated society was the way things should be.
And Cooper Sanchez, an artist, a landscape designer, and, if all goes to plan, a meadow maker.
I think that gardening is a lot harder. The work itself, when you get into gardening, it's man versus nature, and your work is just never, ever, ever done. And as soon as you're finished with one section, you go move on another, and you turn around, and everything's gone back to seed. So it's a lot harder, in my opinion, to garden than paint.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Alive at Oakland Cemetery. At first glance, Oakland Cemetery, as a topic, might appear an unusual choice. Typically, our focus here on Sidewalk Radio is the dynamic qualities and spaces of Atlanta. And, by its very definition, a cemetery would seem to be and possess none of these things. But in the case of Oakland, even though its last plots were sold off way back in 1884, the cemetery has been in a continuous process of evolution in both its landscape and in its meaning for the city. The history of Oakland and this history of Atlanta are inseparable. In fact, the very reason Oakland exists is because Atlanta grew, and grew fast.
In 1850, Atlanta ran out of grave space at the corner of Baker and Peachtree Street. And so they just dug everybody up and moved them out to a farmstead, 6 acres, which was right on the edge of the city limits. It was really out in the country, and it was a farm that had belonged to a person who had buried his wife in the backyard. And they said, well, you know, that would probably be a pretty good place to move the cemetery. So they bought that 6 acres. And that is where Oakland started. It was had very few trees because it was farmed. And so it was a wilderness, a rocky, not very pretty spot. What happened was is that the Civil War came along, and people really began to pay attention to Oakland Cemetery. It grew like Topsy at that point in time, from 6 to 25, 38, and finally 44 acres. The loveliest part of Oakland is the oldest part, and that was at a point in time when they were trying to follow the design of other Victorian rural garden cemeteries.
And the first one of these was the Grove Street Cemetery in New Haven, Connecticut. And it's designed by a guy named James Hillhouse, who was something of a reformer. He was the first person to plant street trees and that sort of thing. And then the one that really becomes the prototype for all subsequent cemeteries of that type is Mount Auburn, which is on the Cambridge-Watertown line and just outside of Boston.
Oakland came along at a point in time when they were trying to change the graveyards of the world from those that you've seen over and over again, where you walk in and there is a standing monument called a tablet, and the tablet after tablet after tablet.
A death's head on them, typically. There was a kind of fear of death and a sort of moral lesson on the epitaph that would say, you know, you better get yourself straight or you're going to go to hell, that sort of thing.
And it was a pretty sterile place. And this was to be a place where you went and the whole concept, Victorian concept of death becoming sleep. And so you went and you went to the cemetery and you slept and waited for salvation. And so you needed to sleep in a really nice place. And so that's why Oakland looks the way that it does now, with a lot of mausoleums, a lot of different types of stones, curving as opposed to exactly straight streets. And most of it, I'm not going to say there wasn't someone that sat down and drew it out, but most of it, what you look at Oakland today, the built as well as the landscape environment, is a result of the families who took great interest in their plots, because that's where they were going to end up.
A concept of perpetual care, and that you would sell these to a family so that you would have a deed, just like you would buy a house today or a lot today. You would buy this parcel, and that was your family burial plot. In medieval Europe, you were buried in a churchyard cemetery based upon your status within the community. So if you were a member of the nobility, or if you were a bishop, a member of the clergy, you were buried, a prominent person buried in the church. Prominent people buried on the south side of the church. Church is always facing west. They were hoping that Messiah would return from the east, so you had to have the congregation lined up in the right way. The idea of sort of that you're buried with your family, it comes with the notion of something that today we would call a middle class.
And a middle class that's a part of life that comes with cities, coinciding with the introduction of factories and jobs and urbanization. But what's really interesting about this is that Oakland did not just passively react to the social changes and demographic demands of Atlanta. It actually exerted a kind of reciprocal influence back on the city itself. In many ways, Oakland, as with other cemeteries of the period, would become a petri dish of sorts, a kind of experimental model for the city.
The cemeteries often become sort of experimental vehicles for ideas that then later will find their way into the development of cities.
You can see this process play out in the very landscape.
It's essentially a grid, and then it begins to deform. I mentioned James Hill House and the Grove Street Cemetery. If you go there, what you will see is that the streets, it really is a grid of streets, and the streets have names. And the names are named after trees. Now, it's sort of inconceivable if you are a sort of medieval Christian, let's say, in 1452 somewhere, that you would imagine that you actually have streets running through your cemetery and that they're named ash, magnolia, maple, you know, first, second, third, fourth. So there's a little bit of the Penn plan for Philadelphia that then influences the Grove Street Cemetery, right? Then the Grove Street Cemetery influences Mount Auburn, and Mount Auburn really sets the pattern for all these curving streets, because 18th century aesthetic theory said that nature abhorred a straight line. And so what you see in Oakland as you move through it is this initial subdivision by grid, which is a sort of conventional practice at the time. And then in around 1850 to 1870, and then it begins by the 1880s and 90s to begin to get these curving streets. And if you look at Atlanta as a whole, you'll see the same thing. You don't have curving residential streets in Atlanta until Inman Park. And so it's significant, but perhaps not in the way you might think. Mark Lerner, who is one of the leading scholars of the Great Pyramid at Khufu and others near Cairo, said that the pyramids built Egypt. Egypt did not build the pyramids. And I like that. I've appropriated that in my own teaching, because I tell my students that the Duomo in Florence built the Renaissance. The Renaissance did not build the Duomo. The point being, once you've organized, once you've figured out how to do something like that, once you've organized yourself, once you've got your supply chain working, your materials, your quarries, your laborers, tremendous amount of skill to build something at that scale, what do you do for a second act? And so you go build cities.
Ironically, even though Oakland was created in response to the growth of Atlanta and helped then direct and give shape to that growth, Atlanta's continued and rapid expansion would ultimately threaten Oakland's very existence.
At the turn of the century, if you lived in Atlanta, black or white, that was an important place and you cared about it. By the middle of the century, if it was old, you tore it down, because we were growing like crazy. And the mentality was, think the future. So there was nobody, the city didn't particularly care about the cemetery, although the lots belonged to the people who bought them. The families were supposed to take care of them. The city had spent a lot of time, because they saw it as a beauty spot, so they used to spend money, but they just quit spending money out there. So the place just fell into terrible disrepair. The wall almost fell down, that beautiful wall.
Oakland has always been a beautiful place, but it went through periods of neglect, and we're trying to sort of recreate what we think the Victorians may have wanted Oakland to look like. It's a Victorian cemetery, so we had to mostly stick really close to the palette of the Victorians. We wanted to stay historically accurate whenever we could. And so we did a lot of boxwood hedges tight. So you can look at the architecture of some of the mausoleums and the way the cemetery is laid out. And we tried to sort of enhance some of that architecture. For example, the palm frond represents victory over death. We can't really illustrate what the symbolism means there, but we can work with a mausoleum that has a palm frond over the door. So we would plant palms on either side, flanking it, you know, with symmetry, to try to work with that to show that we have paid attention to what was there, even though they may not have used palms, you know, at that particular mausoleum. Laurels show up everywhere. Rosemary shows up everywhere. All types of flora and fauna show up on all the headstones And that's one of the things that drew me to the place, is the relationship between real plant life and the symbolic plant life that's all over the place at Oakland.
The oak tree is a symbol of life. You see it in Ireland, you see it everywhere, and that is because it has this little acorn that falls down. And the tree dies, but the acorn germinates and another tree grows. And so it is the, you talk about the life and death, that is what basically the oak tree means.
But this question of representation and meaning is a complicated one in Oakland's case. For while the cemetery was designed as this kind of pastoral oasis for reflection away from the city, it still preserved and was encoded with some of society's worst ills. Sure, Oakland was egalitarian in the sense that every citizen of Atlanta, regardless of race or class, was buried there. But just as in life, these hierarchies were vigorously enforced, so too in death, the distinctions between black and white were certainly maintained.
The African American burial ground opened in 1866. So that is the area where African Americans could buy burial space from 1866 and could only buy burial space in that section up until 1963. The first couple of years, we're not really sure where people were buried. We don't have records for those first couple of years. The records actually start in 1853. And at that point, we have a record of the first African-American burial, which was a young boy named John, whose slaveholder was William Herring. We know that because in the space for the surname in the records, we don't have the names of African-Americans who are buried there. We have the names of the slaveholders. And at that point, there were, in the 1850s, there were maybe a couple of dozen free people of color in the city of Atlanta. But the majority of the African-Americans in Atlanta, about 20% of the population, would have been enslaved. And free or enslaved, they would have been buried in this area of the cemetery.
That can't no grave hold my body down. I wanna rise one morning. Can't no grave hold my body down.
Southview is a cemetery that I looked into originally when I was trying to document African-American history at Oakland. As early as 1878, African-Americans in Atlanta petitioned the city council for a cemetery of their own, that they could control sort of the dignity of burial and the sanctity of the area, that is, the cultural landscape. Because it, while a cemetery is sacred, this was segregated. The African Americans were at the rear of the cemetery in an area that would that had drainage problems even until the 1990s. We were still fixing the drainage there. So there was a lot of protest from African Americans. Also, that petition coincided with the removal of bodies from Slave Square at Oakland. Those bodies were removed based on an order from the Atlanta City Council to disinter the remains of African Americans from Slave Square and move them to the colored pauper grounds. And if there was a marker or a headstone, they could move those with it. But anyone who was unmarked would probably end up in a mass grave in what we would call Potter's Field today, a place where you bury the poor who can't afford a burial space, can't afford to buy a burial space. In protest, basically, they opened their own cemetery. And that split families across those two cemeteries. So that's how my journey led from one cemetery to the other, searching for family members that I expected to find who were no longer there.
And when get an answer from me, Gabriel, I want you to blow loud, Gabriel, because can't no grave hold my body down.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Alive at Oakland Cemetery.
You bury someone that you love there, and you want to go and visit them and put flowers on their grave because it's a pleasant place to be.
Oakland's original intent was to be as much a place for the living as it was for the dead. In fact, on the weekends, Oakland served as a destination for families.
That's what you did on a Sunday. You pack a lunch, you'd ride out there to Oakland, which was still not dead in the middle of the city, and have a picnic and clean up the graves, plant some flowers, I still do it with my wife's mausoleum and plots.
Cemeteries were really the precursors to the first public parks.
The public park emerged at a specific moment in time in reaction to the industrial city. The cemetery was, in some ways, the precursor to that. Certainly, William Cullen Bryant, when he was pushing for the construction of Central Park in New York, mentions Mount Auburn and points to Mount Auburn and the fact that people on their own are going here. They're going there to have picnics, to get out of the city on a weekend day.
In revitalizing Oakland, the cemetery is evolving in its significance for the city, but it's also, in a way, returning to its roots, coming closer and closer to its original vision as a park.
We are absolutely a cemetery. We still bury people at Oakland Cemetery. I'm going to get buried at Oakland Cemetery. But we recognize, and the city recognizes, that we have morphed over time into a place that definitely fits the bill as a park. And so we are part of and managed by, as far as the city is concerned, its parks department.
My favorite part at Oakland is Potter's Field.
That beautiful rolling field out in the back that is about 10, 12 acres that doesn't have a monument on it, which is a basic field monument to all of the paupers and those that couldn't afford a gravesite.
These people are buried in shallow graves, and they're the indigent. So a lot of these are prisoners here in Atlanta. We're buried there, the insane, homeless, and there's no names, very little record, and there's thousands. And I think that that place has the biggest potential to be more and say more. Now that it's evolved and turned into something else, I think that it would lend itself to a meadow, put out wildflower seed and start with annual seed and then move into perennials and have a planting and a design plan that's sort of a sweep of grasses and color throughout the year. A meadow is just, it's a looser, visually, it's a looser gardening practice than, you know, a lot of what we have going on in the formal sections towards the bell tower. But they're everywhere, and that's what I'm interested in my own practice. In my own meadow at home, I have a couple of acres in Clarkston, and that's where I started experimenting with meadows. And a lot of the plants, the perennials and annuals that I have in my own meadow, I got from the side of the road and ditches along train tracks, swamps and timberlands and things like that. And nobody planted that. That just happened. And you can pull from that and bring it into your own space.
That's Cooper Sanchez speaking about his ambitions for transforming Potter's Field into a meadow. This year, as a first experiment, Cooper will be introducing a meadow at the front gates of Oakland, which will further change the way we see
color.
Atlanta's
color.
Oldest landmark in continuous use.
The month of April in the lot in front of Oakland, I hope to see red poppies, this sort of pale purple larkspur, and then the umbellifers, the white Queen Anne's lace. We should have blue flax, which I've never grown before. I'm sort of excited to see how that works. The annual coreopsis, that'll be yellow and orange. And I just laid out a loose idea of the way I wanted certain plants to come up, but then there was also a haphazard just scattering a seed and what I knew, the colors I knew that would be there. And I feel like it's going to be a pretty vibrant scene.
And across from that meadow is a sense of the future of Oakland. The Capitol Gateway Park.
That goes from the eastern side of the Capitol, vaults over the expressway, and then drops down into the area that used to be Capitol Homes, and then goes all the way up in a green swath to the gates of Oakland Cemetery. And it is going to be a tremendous urban park. It's going to do so much for the city and for the state. It will be like the Mall in Washington, D.C., connecting two important monuments or structures.
We build memorials and we build monuments specifically in order to not just simply honor the deceased, but really to obligate future generations to some lesson that we want them to remember. Lincoln, in his Gettysburg Address, is quite explicit about that. The world should, I can't quote it right now, but we'll never remember, you know, what we say here. Of course, they did. But it should never forget what these men did here. Any memorial carries this projection forward.
Now, the fascinating thing is that we are also going to try to turn ourselves to the east on the back wall of Oakland, because that is where the Beltline transfer point from the south side to the north side is planned. So it could possibly be, if we can get our backside opened up, and we're working on getting a gate there, that in 25 years you could take a ride on the Beltline, or you could live on the Beltline and drive to that, get off at that particular spot, walk through historic Oakland Cemetery, walk through this wonderful linear park, all less than a mile, and go to your job at the Capitol.
You've been listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas, and today I want to thank my guests, George Hart, Doug Allen, Dr. D.L. Henderson, and local artist Cooper Sanchez.